This is the Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
This is, as it is every week, the Deep Dive. I'm Brooke Spector, and we're here at 9 o'clock in the morning on Fridays to talk about a topic of interest and importance and perhaps even excitement, depending on, you know, your personal preferences. And sometimes we do the arts, and sometimes we do current affairs, the dismal state of the economy, the hopeful state of politics. And today we're going to talk to Reg Moalusi, the head of South African National Editors Forum. He's the executive director, and it includes, obviously, editors as members and other journalists, too, and probably other influentials. And Reg has a serious career as a journalist over the years, and he went to Wits University, good man, did his degree in journalism and media studies, and has edited newspapers like the Daily Sun, which is the exciting version of journalism, I think sometimes people think. But in a serious way, of course, media generally, and newspapers in particular, perhaps, have reached something of a crossroads globally. The old joke in the Soviet Union was about the two main newspapers, Izvestia and Pravda. There's no news in one, and there's no truth in the other. And that was probably a little unfair, but not by very much. The problem, though, in the U.S. now, for example, is that newspapers as a thing are about as well regarded by the public as the United States Congress, and both of them are just ahead of used car salesmen in terms of reputation, which is something of a crisis for the media. And there are increasingly people who feel, I think it's probably worth generalizing worldwide, people who feel that newspapers and the media generally, they have bias, they have an edge, they have a secret agenda, they want to tell you things that you should believe because they want you to believe it, rather than because they're trying to do their job. And it gives an opening for governments to try to figure out ways to silence them, to make it harder for them to do that job. So it puts you and the others in SANF in a difficult but challenging space.
It does, Brooks. It does. It really puts us in a very difficult space. And, I mean, you just did an awesome opening there. And it's an awesome.
That's my job.
And it's an awesome opening that gets one to reflect, I mean, talking about government, if you remember the ANC some years back, they wanted to come with something they called a media appeals tribunal, where they thought that our press council system is not enough, it's not adequate enough, it's not doing a lot, and we need to be regulated. So
press council was voluntary.
Press council was voluntary, but they thought, their view, I think some ANC members are still of that view anyway, and fortunately for us, they haven't brought it back on the agenda, is that the press council, much as it's self-regulated, it's not enough. And what they need to be more stringent as government and all of that.
Why did they want to have some sort of overarching press monitoring and quote-unquote management? What was behind the motive of that?
If you remember well, leading up to that ANC conference in that December, I think it was the Polokwane conference. Hmm. Yeah. If you remember well, the media was doing its work and doing its work of covering government, covering the ANC.
Embarrassing people sometimes.
Well, when you do your work, then you embarrass people for not doing their work. That's something else.
That's the problem to an investor problem, isn't it?
Yes. It was leading up to that, and where they just thought, look, their view was that the media is acting as if they are an opposition party or whatever not, and we were not. We're just doing our work. We're saying, here's a governing party and a governing party that's failing, and not just failing in one province. They were failing across, particularly across the 8 provinces that they govern. And people were not seeing any changes. Instead, we are seeing the rise and rise of corruption. And that was back then. It was even before the state capture, yes. So you can imagine. It led up to that. They got so angry and irritated with the media to say, these guys are out of control. They need to be reined in.
Were they ever able to point to an article or a judgment that was untrue?
Unfortunately not.
That's, I think, part of the real key to the problem.
Yes, but unfortunately not. Instead, what we were seeing, you know, at a press conference, you'll hear someone says, no, but we saw that opinion piece on a Daily Maverick written by Brooks, and he's being unfair. And we're like,
I'm always fair.
He's being unfair, how? And what did he say? What did he do? So it was a matter of they targeted a couple of names of opinion makers. They targeted certain newspapers at the time, I think particularly newspapers, that's where they were quite angry about.
That's interesting that they were, in a sense, looking back historically, but not back far enough, because they got more than a fair shake from newspapers a long time ago.
Yes.
And if nothing else, newspapers kept their causes, their ideas, their thoughts, and their people in the news.
Yes. And I mean, if you look, let's hug back, Brooks. Let's hug back to newspapers before 94 in this country, and newspapers that by and large, we can say they were in their corner. I mean, if we look at, Percy Tokoza, whom we keep on mentioning through this time of the year, Black Wednesday and all of
it. We'll get to that in a minute. Yeah.
I mean, if you look at him, the work that he was doing at the time, what he was writing, Golden City Post, City Press, we look at the then Daily Mail, the likes of Raymond Law, what they were doing. We look later on in the years where the likes of Freie Vierblad were doing, the likes of the Weekly Mail that were doing. All these newspapers kept the current governing party, its personalities in the news, and they were writing favorably for them.
And they were writing about things at a time when they knew they had to look over their shoulder all the time about what might happen to them.
Yes. Yes. What might happen to them and
I sometimes did.
It sometimes did. And also for us as media personalities, what we always say to them is that we're not saying pay us back. We're not saying, you know, pat us on the back. But those journalists that were writing in your favor, that were sort of going beyond the call of journalism at the time, also put their lives in danger. I mean, we all know what happened with Steve Biko's friend, Donald Woods. We know what happened with him. We know what happened with the likes of your Matata, your Joe Paul, your Percy Tokoza, Greg Laster, all those
guys. Juby Meyer. Various others.
Yes. Various others. It's a whole lot of them. So all these guys were saying, what's happening in the apartheid state is not right, and we need to write about it. But now, conveniently, now that, you know, you are in charge, you don't want to be criticized.
Is it fair for the government or the governing political party to criticize the media for not covering the good sides of things, the things government has done well, or the things that government, is their criticism fair that you unjustly only cover the bad bits?
It's not fair. It's not fair. Why is it not fair? It's not fair because, let's call it for what it is, folks. The good stuff is not a lot to cover.
you'll cover it if you can find it.
If you can find, there isn't a lot of good stuff to cover. I think driving to your house now, I think I hit about 3 or 4 potholes, and it was a short drive. It was a 10-kilometer drive.
I'm sorry about that, but don't send me the bill.
Cost the exercise. The good stuff is not there. Yeah. I mean, readers across, we both know that readers across, whether TV, whether radio, whether print, digital, they always say, but guys, go find the good stories. You are depressing us with all this news. Where are the good stories? But the good stories are hard to find. If we find them, they're not good stories from government. They're not.
They're good stories despite government in many cases.
Yes. Yeah? They are done by someone else. They are done by civil society or ordinary citizens.
People who get together and pool the resources and buy the asphalt and the tar and fix the pothole themselves. And then the government comes along and says to them, you can't do that.
You can't do that. Yes. That's what they've been saying now. But why did you buy the asphalt? Why didn't you come to us first and ask for permission?
We're going to take a quick station break and we'll be right back. This is The Deep Dive. I'm Brooke Spector and today's guest is Reg Moalusi, the executive director of SANEF, the South African National Editors Forum.
This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
This is The Deep Dive. I'm Brooke Spector and we're back again and we're talking with Reg Moalusi, the executive director of the South African National Editors Forum. And we've been talking about the good news, the good stuff, and why it's so rare in the media. There is an aphorism, certainly in American journalism and perhaps worldwide, that if it bleeds, it leads. The idea is if it's terrible or appalling or awful or horrible, that's what people want to read. And when it's good news, people go, yeah, well, all right, moving on, go to the next thing, read the sports page. And is there a problem with the media in trying to report good things in a way that they're not boring?
Well, look, I'll take the criticism. There's been that criticism to say perhaps we focus and we don't search enough as the media to look out for the good bits out there. But if you look at the majority of South African media, I don't think we're there. That if it bleeds, it doesn't leak. I don't think we're there. I think what we are blessed with as the local media here at home is that we are blessed with a very vibrant country in terms of coming to the news diary. What happens on a daily basis? I mean, if ever you switch on any of the news channels, you'll find that there's a breaking story or whatever not. So there's that. The other aspect is that we try our bit to be fair, to be balanced, to look at, let's not be sensational in our headlines. You just have to go, Brooks, and you look at the rulings of the Press Council and the BCCSA, and you look at the kind of complaints they
have. Define the BCCSA for listeners. What does it stand for?
Oh, the Press Council of South Africa. The Press Council obviously deals with digital platforms. It deals with the print media. There's a press code there. And then the BCCSA stands for the Broadcasting Complaints Commission of South Africa.
We have to be careful because we can live in acronym city.
No one knows who they are.
Yeah.
So those are the guys who deal with you. If you've got any complaint with any of the news channels or whatever that's on TV or radio, then you go to those guys. But if you look at their rulings, you go to their website, they also, you analyze and you realize that what they deal with, what the complaints that they get, are not the complaints that, I'm not saying they're not valid. There was a fair ruling, but it was a fair ruling that shows that journalists are there and journalists are indeed doing their work.
Part of the other, I think, a slightly different question. There's so many different ways now people can absorb the news, whatever that is.
Yeah.
You can pick up a newspaper. You can read the posters on the street as you're going to or from work or just out and about. You can watch half dozen different ways of seeing things on television. You get digital streaming and electronic information. Are people now just so overwhelmed by information that they have started to go, just a plague on all your houses? It's too much. I can't deal with this. Let me go back and try to fix my garden or, tame my pet or feed my children or something.
There is, unfortunately, that the people are overwhelmed with information. And I think the popularity of platforms such as your Twitter, your WhatsApp, your Instagram, Facebook.
Which isn't really news.
It's not news, but unfortunately, Brooks, and we have to accept, most people have gone to those platforms as a way of getting their news. I mean, if ever you listen to most young people who tell you, no, I don't have a DSTV subscription, for instance, and you ask them, okay. They say, but why do you have that? And I say to them, because I need to watch from CNN to BBC to ENCA to Newsroom Africa. They say, no, I don't need that. I just go on Twitter. I've got my daily feed on every day, every morning at 6 a.m. and then 6 p.m. That's all. So, and you ask yourself, is that a perpetuation of misinformation? Is this why we have this problem? Which platforms are they following when they go to your Twitter?
In a way, it's a kind of self-censorship. I don't want to be a well-informed person. I just want to know about things that I decided in advance I was prepared to know about.
And the danger to that then becomes you are forming an opinion about that, yeah. About what you are ill-informed about. After forming that opinion, you don't want to be corrected about it.
And that leads us inevitably to the question for media in the traditional sense, whether it's broadcast or print. Does the media have an agenda? I don't know how they get that. Where the secret meeting is, where they set up the agenda.
I'd like to go to that meeting.
Where's that club?
I'd like to go to that meeting. Well, someone once said to me, at Sanef, we are a cabal. And we are a cabal that runs this country. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, no, you are like the Brüder Bund. You are in charge of the media. You are in charge of everything. But yeah, I don't know. Oops, yeah, maybe let me let you finish. But yeah, I get that quite a lot.
And how do you answer that?
There's no agenda. There's no secret meeting. Yeah. I don't leave my house, my wife and kids and say, look, I need to go to a meeting at 10 p.m. I should be back just after one because I'm meeting several people. And then you hear people saying, but for instance, the editor of the Daily Maverick is your friend. The editor of News 24 is your friend. The editor of Ground Up is your friend. The editor of EWN, of the Sowetan, of the Sunday Times. You are a clique. You run this particular agenda. And I say, no, we don't do that. We don't have time for that. All these people that you are mentioning, much as they can be members of SANEF, much as they can be all buddy buddies when we meet, but you must remember that they've got a business objective. A business objective, which is what? Which is news for them. Which is they need to do their jobs and they need to do those jobs excellently.
The agenda is also survival.
Survival in the day and age we live in, it's survival because if on a day like this, on a Tuesday, they get their numbers have been assessed that this is on this story, this is how many, you know, views or eyeballs we got on this story. This is what we got. What are the advertising numbers? What are the marketing numbers? Mm. Are we meeting our overheads for the month? Will we be able to pay salaries?
You mentioned the dreaded word overheads. it's hard for some readers, some viewers, some listeners to realize that the media is a business and it has to stay in business in order to do its core business.
Yes.
And that it doesn't dictate what you cover, but it tells you how well you're going to be able to cover things.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And Brooks, just to elaborate on that point, you hear someone says the media played a critical part. I think the Chief Justice also attributes to that the media played a key part in the exposure of state capture, for instance.
At some risk to some people's lives.
Yes, at some risk.
He's nodding his head when he says that. He went all serious on me.
It's a huge risk, but if the Chief Justice can say that, then he mentions something, and then you hear someone who's supposedly well educated or well informed saying to you, "I'm no longer buying Sunday papers because I don't see what the media does. I don't have money to spend on Sunday papers, for instance." And then you say, but do you like your democracy? Do you like to safeguard this democracy in South Africa? And they say, yes, I'd like to. But do you like a thriving media? Do you want the media to thrive? Do you want the media to be active? Do you want the media to protect and defend whatever is left of this constitutional democracy so that we can safeguard it for the next generation?
On that relatively somber note, or very somber note, let's take another station break. This is The Deep Dive. I'm Brooks Spector. My guest today is Reg Moalusi of the South African National Editors Forum. And we'll be right back and we'll continue that very point.
This is The Deep Dive with Brooks Spector.
And this is The Deep Dive, and it's Brooke Spector with you as your host. And we're speaking to Reg Mawalusi of the South African National Editors Forum. And we were talking about the preservation of democracy and the preservation of the media in order to preserve democracy. And I want to refer you to a couple of cases, very recent ones, in which SANF has had a hand. One is the long-running case now that involved Karen Maugham, a freelance journalist sometimes, but a legal journalist for a variety of sort of organizations. And in fact, one of the junior journalists with the Daily Maverick who was accosted while following and covering a demonstration at a local bank, which is a serious violation of that person's individual liberty and physical security for that matter. And SANF has a job to do in that regard. Am I right?
A huge job to do. A huge job to do. That's why when the former president took current court, we came in as amicus, and we were quite happy of that.
Amicus
outcome.
Is friend, is Latin for friend.
Amicus curiae.
Yeah. Friend of the court.
Friend of the court. So we came in as the friend of the court. And after we came in as friend of the court, our judiciary and its independence and how sensible it is came through and then ruled in our favor. That was a case that could have been avoided, because when people want to exploit our legal systems and our courts and taking journalists to court, they don't realize that there's money to be spent. We're spending money on these things, and it's a lot of
that's something that gets elided right around by many people. It costs money to do that defense.
It costs money, lot of money.
Which comes out of someplace.
It comes out of someplace, and then we approach lawyers, and we say to lawyers, look, can't you do this for us pro bono? And they say, no. We have to eat too. We can give you a discount. We can give you a discounted rate. For such a case, that's going to the High Court, we need senior counsel and all of it. That's why we are doing this fundraiser next month.
I will get to that in a minute.
And the fundraiser is aimed at raising money for particularly this, what we call a media legal defense fund, where we say for such cases, I mean, Brooks, I can tell you now, I was Friday afternoon, we get to the local bank. It was 15 minutes before the meeting with the bank on the Daily Maverick journalist assault case, Ms. Mzila. I get an email from lawyers where we are assisting another journalist in Mpumalanga who was taken to court by a corrupt police commissioner that he kept on exposing.
Yeah, less publicized perhaps, but just as important.
Just as important. I get a 165K bill. I nearly fell off my chair.
I nearly
fell off my chair. And I was like, where do we get such money?
And you said, of course, I'll write you a check. No problem.
No. I said, can we have a meeting about this? And I said, I shared that email with our treasurer general, because there isn't such money lying around. So you understand when I say the abuse of our court systems and processes, where people are running to court and they want to have their way with us, and they know what they did was wrong. They know that they are trying to prevent journalists from doing their work, or they are intimidating them in a way, also harassing them to say, don't say that, don't do your work. I mean, the police commissioner, this story in Mpumalanga, what Rayo Tlatshwayo did that to say, look, I'm exposing her because of this tender irregularity. So that's the one case. That's the court aspects. I think last week, if you read our statements, we can get to that now. There's also now the intimidation, harassment, and the manhandling of our journalists. There's a worrying trend in this country. And that worrying trend, we as an organization, as SANF, we've been talking about online cyberbullying of our women journalists.
It isn't just women journalists, but I think women journalists probably feel a little more insecure.
Yes.
Then
yes.
You or I might.
Yes. They feel more insecure. They feel more threatened, particularly considering the kind of violence that's rampant in this country. So what we saw last week was now something that was beyond just online. We saw in Makanda, a freelance journalist and a freelance lecturer at Rhodes University, Anna Majavu, who writes for Crocos Mail,
which is a small, well-respected newspaper that's been around for 200 years or thereabouts.
200 years or more. The rich, very rich history. She went to court to go cover a murder case there. She got there and she was literally accosted and had to run for cover and had to sort of try to get her cell phone back and all of that. And people asking her why she's there, shouting at her and accosting her. That was one.
That's not what you signed up for.
No, no. Then last week, Tuesday, as you mentioned earlier, Ms. Mutsila went to down the road from here to the head office of Standard Bank to go cover a protest. And we all saw how she was manhandled and then she was sort of kicked out of the building and all of that for simply being a journalist and doing her work. Something that we have taken up with the bank. But before we met Standard Bank last week Friday, we said to them, you need to reach out to the Daily Maverick and apologize to them. And once they've accepted your apology, then you can meet with us. And that was our condition, which is what happened.
Yeah, well, and somebody came to their senses and said, I think maybe we did something wrong.
Yes.
But that isn't the standard anymore. The standard is now, you know, go ahead, fight with us.
Yes. Well, go ahead. You want to take us on, fight us, and then we'll drag this on and on and on.
And you have to have another fundraiser.
And then the other one, which was unfortunate, was, I mean, we have seen how a whole lot of pensioners are now struggling with their, you know, grants not being paid and all of that. And an ENCA journalist, Ronim Timkulu, went into a post bank to go cover a story about these pensioners not getting their money. And she was, you know, kicked out of the post office and not just told leave and all of that, you know.
Post office being a public facility.
Public facility where everyone can come in, where you can speak to the people around there, but they decided to kick her out the way they did. And no apologies coming from them. They don't see anything wrong. So these are the kind of instances and cases that I talk about.
Yeah.
These are the cases that I say to you, they are worrying. And one gets to ask yourself that when are you going to stop? Are they going to stop? Are we going to get to a point where we have people, whether it's outside the court in Makanda, whether it's at the head office of a multinational bank, whether it's at a post bank, all public spaces sort of, that people can say these are journalists, let's afford them the space and time to do their work.
And if they mess up and if they report something incorrectly and attribute the wrong things to the wrong people, then they have to fess up.
Yes. And we have always said, Brooks, that the media, where most people, when I speak like this, they say, oh, so you can do wrong, you can be wrong, you can be told anything. I say, no, we are not beyond reproach. If we are wrong, we always say we are wrong. And we say such. And where we were wrong, and where we also, if I can give you one example, where we reprimand our journalist was the Senzo Meyiwa court case in Pretoria.
I think it was sometime. That's still going on, isn't
it? That's still going on. Where a witness who was supposed to be protected was walking in the passage towards the court. And journalists wanted to accost him and say, can we have an interview before the court starts? And the poor guy had to run in an empty court and hide there. So we had to come in because everyone was saying, but what are the editors saying about this kind of behavior?
Yeah.
We had to come in and say, that was wrong. You don't do that. That was wrong because we are exposing the guy who's fearing for his life. So you don't do that. So and the journalist said, we now get it. We are sorry. But we had to say it publicly.
Let me tell you a funny story. I wrote an article some years ago about what was then a big public issue in the U.S., the Occupy Wall Street phenomena. And I was not without criticism of the protesters as well as the big financial companies in their responses. And I got a comment back from somebody out there, published it in their responses space. And they said, I know who you really are. You're just a communist tool of Wall Street. And I have spent the next 10 years trying to figure out what my crime was.
What exactly did you do?
I have no idea. I have no idea.
Where did that come from?
It still mystifies me. Let me turn this to a slightly more serious topic and the reason why, in fact, why we're talking with you now. Yeah. A couple of weeks from now, we get in this country to, I wanted to say the word celebrate, but no, actually we want to commemorate an event, 1977, October 19, Black Wednesday, in which the then government closed down a number of newspapers, a number of publications, and began arresting a variety of journalists for having the temerity to work there or edit them. And it's the date which really was sort of the low ebb where the government or any government might see its relationship to the media. And that has become an annual observance by your organization and media houses more generally to recognize the importance of that event, as well as the fact that it is not impossible for things like that to occur in future. In other countries around the world, we see newspapers being closed often.
Yes.
And journalists run for their lives or flee their respective countries or occasionally just stop being journalists because it's too dangerous. Tell listeners a little bit about Black Wednesday and why we're celebrating, commemorating. I almost said the word celebrate again, didn't I?
No, thanks for that introduction. It was a very good and generous introduction. It's a tough time for us when we hark back and we memorize the events of that time, and when we look at exactly what happened during that time. As you rightly said, it was 19 October, 1977. We saw editors, we saw journalists, we saw Black movement activists being harassed, being arrested, and all of that. And you will, if you remember well, this was sort of 2 or 3 months later, after the death of Stephen Bantu Bonke Biko. So it was a tough time. So for us as the media, we always say, as the current generation of journalists, we need to think of those times and we need to appreciate and think of the sacrifices that have been made for us to be able to be here now and be able to practice in a democracy, in a free country, and work as a journalist and be able to, you know, scrutinize and criticize the government of the day. So the generation of your Phesiqo Rosa, your Agritlaste, your Ben Ludier, they did all of this to say the upcoming generations need to practice this. So the dinner really is SANEF reaching out to corporate South Africa to say, please come on board and support the work SANEF does. Your support goes a long way, and your support is funds that we are able to say when we approach the Durban High Court that says to us, no cameras are allowed in the Zandi Medical. We are able to take that up. We say all the cameras and audio visual can be allowed in court. That's what we are trying to do. We'll be using that money for that. And yeah.
So your effort in raising funding through your event, your gala event, which is what, 20th of October, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, Friday, 20th October.
You're not having a big party so everybody can just have a self-congratulatory, gee, aren't we wonderful? And let's have a really good 20-year-old scotch on the table.
No.
And an excellent, Paul Sauer Canon Cult, as a red wine and a really, really wonderful Verheugen, white and, you know, prime, Wagyu beef steaks.
Nothing of the sort.
It's fried chicken and Coca-Cola. Okay.
It's fried chicken and Coca-Cola and some cheap whiskey. Very, very cheap whiskey. If ever we lucky, it can be some Irish whiskey, but only if we are lucky, it can be that. So we're not doing that. It's an evening where we invite guest speaker who may be in the news.
Who's the guest speaker?
Yeah, this year's guest speaker is Mpho Makwana, the chairperson of the Eskom board. So he needs to come.
That's newsworthy.
Yeah. That's why we chose him. Because, yeah, we are quite lucky that, we are still on, we still have the lights. So he needs to come and tell us that how can we as the media try to come in and then assist? I don't know. What can we do to assist Eskom if they need our assistance?
Won't it be ironic if in the middle of this presentation, the lights go out? That happened to the president. That
will be great, wouldn't it be?
Yeah, it's newsworthy.
That would be great. In fact, that's a good idea. Maybe we should check the schedule at the hotel.
Have somebody around the back behind the curtain.
Yeah. And then we say to the hotel, delay your backup for like 5 minutes.
Give us 30 seconds longer.
30 seconds. Yeah. So that backup can really be newsworthy and all of that. So yeah. So that will be, so yeah, he's the guest speaker. He's been confirmed.
Where is this going to be?
This will be at the venue at the Hilton Hotel. And yeah, so far we've got a couple of corporates that have confirmed tables, and we are still calling for more corporates to come and confirm tables.
Okay. So to reiterate, they're looking for help, and they promise they're not going to hand out absolutely superb gourmet meals and extraordinarily expensive whiskey.
No,
but they're going to have an exciting, newsworthy event that's appropriate for the purpose intended.
Yes, absolutely. We'll be as humble as easy and as, you know, the food there, the drinks, nothing fancy, nothing of the sort. And I think the guests who are coming there, they also know that the monies that we are here to support Sanef. And we don't expect some, you know, premium free course meal, and we are not going to behave like people as the famous author once said, writing about Kenya. What did they say? It's our time to eat. Yeah.
And it'll be your time to eat, but cheaply.
but cheaply. Not our time to eat while we know that we've asked a corporate for money, but we are going to misuse that money. No.
Let's take another station break, commercial break. This is Brooke Spector with The Deep Dive, and we're speaking with Reg Moalusi of the South African National Editors Forum, where he is the executive director, and we'll be right back.
This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
This is The Deep Dive, and I'm Brooke Spector, of course, with you every Friday at 9. And my guest today is Reg Moalusi of the South African National Editors Forum. And we have been talking about the dinner that they're having in honor of Sanef's work in recognition and memory of Black Wednesday, which took place in 1977, and the threat to media and journalism that always lies just below the surface, sort of like a crocodile. You can see the eyes, but you don't know where the animal is yet. And I think Reg wants to tell me a little more about the way in which you don't have to be a major company and buy the whole table. You can do something intermediate, I guess, huh?
Yes, I mean, you don't really, we are not only taking the purchasing of these tables from big companies. We also accept individuals who want to purchase seats. Individuals can be two individuals saying we only have, for instance, 10,000 can become. You are more than welcome. You can come through. We also calling on small enterprises who cannot afford the whole table, which is, I mean, your normal table is 60,000 excluding VAT, but we do have small corporates.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I can't do that.
But small corporates can come in and say, this is the little we have. What can we do? We accommodate those and we encourage them to come. And I must reiterate that, Brooks, last year we had quite a fantastic impact of small businesses that came through that bought their individual seats, that contributed prices to the guests by way of what was really a fun quiz about the media.
And it was a quiz, huh?
It was a quiz.
Good, I get to come. I get to win.
It was a quiz of nice prizes that were given on the night of, you know, from dinners, books, weekend away. So those small businesses as well, you know, they came in for us, and then these are small businesses that say, we see you, we recognize you, and we want to support the work you do.
Okay, the quiz, presumably I can set up a panel of people. We can win, we can answer everything right now and win the grand prize. Okay. All right. Let's talk about
I saw
that.
Some people Googling last year to say, what would be the answer to that?
You gotta stop that. Because that way lies trouble.
Yeah.
Let's take a look. Now we've covered the current circumstances. We've talked a bit about the past. Let's talk about the future. In this case, the future of media.
Yes.
And where it's going. My understanding of media usage in this country is that people still, even in this day and age, a majority of people still get most of their news, if you think broadly across the country, from radio.
Yes.
And television comes after that, and then printed media comes after that. Mm. And then internet-based media is after that, but rising quickly. So that if you were to look at the statistics of monthly sales, subscriptions of printed newspapers, it's terrifying, really, to see the numbers dropping the way they are.
Scary, scary. I mean, if ever you look at the paper used to edit what they sell now, it's quite scary. I mean, 5 years back when I left, I think they were on 140,000 a day. They are now on 16,000.
16.
16.
You could almost give it away and lose less money that way.
Exactly. Exactly. So that's why that's scary. So talking about what you just said, oops, the conversation we've been having as SANEF and our members is we need to talk about the future sustainability of journalism, because we love the profession and we are saying journalism is not dying. What's perhaps is dying is exactly that, where circulation newspapers being bought, but people still want to engage with them. So how do we sustain that, and how do we bring about new revenue models that can sustain us? But while we are doing that, we are also saying, let's talk to our members who are academics at journalism departments to say, the young students that we are teaching, perhaps we also need to reiterate and try to teach them, not try, but we have to ensure that we teach them what are the future revenue models that we can come up with that can make money and sustain ourselves. I mean, we spoke about the most expensive overhead area, and we know exactly what that is. It's salaries. And we want people to keep their jobs. We don't want journalists losing their jobs. So that's what we need to talk about. If ever, as you rightly say, internet-based media is rising. But as it rises, the big question is the kind of revenue and numbers that they are getting in. Are they able to sustain that going forward? So that's what we need. That's what we are discussing when we say the sustainability of the media from community to the so-called mainstream.
A number of very reputable newspapers in the United States, for example, have stopped publishing, you know, physical copies of their paper entirely. Mm-hmm. They've gone to an entirely internet-based publication. You still subscribe. You still pay. But they've cut out all the mechanical processes and the delivery costs and the paper and all the rest of it. And it kept the journalists from losing their jobs. But in some ways, there was a loss of connection between people and their daily local paper.
There's that loss. Hence on a Sunday morning, and that to the much to the chagrin of my wife, when I say to her, she says to me, okay, it's a Sunday morning, you wake up, where are you going? So I need to get my papers. So going to get that coffee and the papers, that's what we need. Because some of us, we are from that generation where I want to feel something. I want to feel this thing as I read. So unfortunately, that we have to accept. We have to accept that the times we live in, things have changed. And the media, as the media, we really need to accept that internet-based, you know, news consumption is what has to come up. And as we accept that to say, are we going to make people pay in a country like South Africa? Or are we going to say certain news items are free, but certain exclusives are, you need to pay for them? So that's a conversation we need to have.
I'm kind of old school. I still subscribe to a print copy of one weekly publication that gets delivered to my house. But I also pay for the electronic access of that, as well as the electronic access to two major U.S. newspapers. And I get a million newsletters from all kinds of places around the world. And I'm perpetually running to keep up. And so my news diet is now a mix of print and electrons.
Yeah.
But my children they look at me as if I came from the early Stone Age, receiving an actual print copy of a magazine that has been mailed to me from Britain, and they can't figure out why in the world I would do such a thing.
Yeah, because children, they just don't get it. But I mean, we are from that generation, and the printed copy, it's the same like books, where someone says, but you can just go to Amazon and buy this book. No, I don't want it. I want the physical book so that I can read it cover to cover. So that's exactly what we do. And hopefully the children, as they grow up, they'll get a time to realize why were we obsessed with all these printed copies and the treasure that lives in these printed copies.
We're just about at the end of our conversation. Just for a second then, just repeat the information about the fried chicken dinner with a
Right. It's 19 October, Friday, 19 October. We are at the Houghton, the venue. We're starting at 6. We're still calling on small businesses. We're calling on individuals. We're calling on everyone to come through and support us. We still left with a couple of tables. We are encouraging everyone to come support media freedom, to come commemorate Black Wednesday with us.
And if they want to help, who do they call? Give a phone number or an email.
If they want to help, the information is there on our website. Okay. We also work with the Buzz Factor. At the Buzz Factor, they can contact Bridget.
Okay.
And if they contact Bridget, Bridget can assist them end to end with everything, with all the details. And yeah, then Bridget is the amen. And,
or woman.
Wow, woman, actually. I'm the amen. Bridget will be the woman. But they can contact Bridget for ease of reference. On the prospect. So yeah, so that's where we're at.
Okay. We have been speaking with Reg Moalusi of the South African National Editors Forum. He is executive director, and we have done the past, the present, and the future of journalism and media in South Africa and the world, with a special nod of appreciation to them for defending press freedom in this country wherever it is threatened, and encouraging people to help them do that on into the future. Again, Rich, thanks very much for coming by.
Thanks for having us.